Blog Talk Radio.
The views and opinions of this show do not reflect the views and opinions of Wikicuriosity Media or its affiliates. Wikicuriosity Media, changing the world you listen to. Any music featured on Wikicuriosity Media programs is used with the express written consent of the artist, owner, or distributor. Coming to you live from the Wikicuriosity Studios in Knoxville, Tennessee, it's Behind the Screen Radio Show.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another exciting episode of Movie of the Week. I'm your host, Dan. Joining me tonight is my co-host, Austin. And we've got special guest, Miss Angel.
Hello.
And Alex is joining us from his studio in the great state of Michigan.
Hello.
And you can join us as well. All you got to do is call in 718-664-9735. Again, 718-664-9735. That'll bring you directly into the studio with us, or you can join us on the live feed on Behind the Screen Radio Show Facebook page. We are currently streaming live on that page. You can go there. Check it out. You can message us on the Facebook Live, and we will either answer you on the live chat or on the air. Speaking of Facebook, if you haven't already, go to Behind the Screen Radio Show and click like, share, and follow. Behind the Screen Radio Show Facebook page. Sorry. Click like, share, and follow. Be kept up to date on everything going on in BTS land. Also, head on over to Wikicuriosity Media's Facebook page. Give them a like, share, and follow. Be kept up to date on everything going on in all of Wikicuriosity media. From the Facebook page, you can access the website, www.wikicuriosity.wixsite.com/WCmedia. On the webpage, you can check out photos of us. You can check out our blogs. You can look at, you know, information about the shows. You can also look at information about, you know, us as well. You can also access, there's a link up at the top where you can access all of our old shows. You can also access our YouTube channel, Wikicuriosity Media, where we've got videos and shows and all that. All of it needs to be updated. We are currently working on that. The website and the YouTube channel kind of got pushed back a little bit, a lot, due to last year's pandemic. And
you mean panorama?
Yeah. We'll go with that. Your headphones are on backwards.
Your ear.
Yeah, but it's pulling across your body. It's not supposed to do that. Anyway. We've, you know, because of everything that has gone on over the past year and a half, things have been put on hold on some of our other, projects.
It's hard to believe though that it's been like a year and a half.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
now we're going to start moving forward again slowly,
yeah.
Like a slow retreat.
I think I can.
A little bit of time, baby.
Anyway, so yeah, we're working on getting that caught up and updated and up to date and all that.
We also have, I'm going to say active, doesn't have a lot of videos on it yet, but we do have a TikTok channel, and it will be becoming more active very soon, sooner than probably some of the other projects. I can get you the
Like Wicked Angel or something, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Hold on.
I know, that's all you. I've only got an account so I can watch stuff. You're the one that does that.
Yeah. It is Wicked Angel, capital W, capital A, on TikTok.
Yeah.
Or at TMR01.
So
go check it out. It's, you know, it's got a couple cool videos on there. Not a whole lot of traction. I wasn't really trying though, so we'll get to that.
Yeah. Okay. I think I got everything.
Quick PSA, Falling from Grace should be airing this week. We had to take a couple weeks off while we redid and dealt with some issues with the studio, and then, you know, work schedules kind of mess things up, but we should be airing this week, Tuesday night, 6 p.m. Eastern time. So there you go. Come listen. We got so much to talk about. It's been weeks.
Thanks for, you know, plugging your show right in the middle of mine.
Hey, I got to do my...
No, I'm kidding.
I got to do what I got
to
do.
I'm kidding. Okay. So it is Sunday night. It is the end of the week or the beginning of the week, depending on which, you know, calendar you go by.
I go by the calendar where Mondays suck, so I'm going to guess it's the end of the weekend, which is physically bad.
Yeah, it's the end of the weekend. You know, the typical work week starts up tomorrow. My week just, you know, all blends together.
True.
Yeah, so. Anybody have anything interesting? Austin, what have you been doing this week?
Sitting in a home. That's about it.
No, that's not true. You got to build a bike. And use it today.
Yep.
Austin knocked out like 6.5 miles today.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that was riveting.
Right? He's so extroverted.
Yeah. Yeah. Moving on. No. Alex, what did you do this week?
Absolutely nothing. I worked on my back porch some more. Other than that, I haven't really done much.
You have a fairly large back porch. What are you doing to it?
We have like a door that goes from our garage to our backyard. We're kind of taking that section out and just removing it and putting stairs down to the yard from both sides of the door and the porch. So I got it all taken out. I just have to clear out and level the area and put the stairs in. So shouldn't be too much longer.
Sounds like somebody wants to come and do our back porch.
Poor back porch. Lumber is like ridiculously priced. Can we build it with something other than lumber?
Well, we're doing our front porch on concrete, so.
That'd be a lot of concrete. Like,
yeah.
You'd have to build up a lot of concrete.
Well, you just build a base floor and then build concrete on top of that.
Over and over and over and over and over again to get to the back door.
No. You just build a base level.
It's a lot of weight to hold.
And then put concrete on top.
You talking about my weight?
No, the concrete. Well, he's talking about
sinkholes. So have you seen our backyard?
I have.
It'd be scary to try to do any more than just like a pad.
Yeah.
And then we'd have to have like, we'd still have to have a porch and stairs and stuff.
Yeah.
We'd have to have wide stairs at least because my experience with back doors and stairs and a dog has so far been monumentally horrible.
But then it would be a pain in the ass for me to grill and all that.
You'd have to go down to the pad, yeah.
Yeah. I'd rather just have a back porch.
It's just the idea of trying to rebuild when lumber is so costly. Sucks.
Yeah.
Where are the Amish people? I need Amish people. They didn't raise their prices.
See, we're not having to buy much, if any, lumber because I'm just reusing parts. I took away and I'm just cutting a section off our stairs and just moving it. And then reusing some stairs that don't go anywhere. I'm going to put them over by the door that goes into the backyard. So we kind of lucked out.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we definitely need to do a project and rebuild our entire back porch, but until something breaks and it's not so expensive to buy just simple wood, we're kind of stuck.
Yeah.
It sucks for those of us that are trying to, like, do home improvements so we can sell our house. Like, that back porch has to be fixed before we can sell.
Yeah.
There's no way. It's not safe. Yeah, I don't know.
I might try and price it here in the next couple of weeks and see.
Count the boards.
That's exactly what I'm going to do.
And I'm redoing a trailer, too. We have a trailer that's been sitting in our yard for, like, a year and a half now. And I'm going to take it down, sand it down, and repaint it and make it all pretty again.
Okay. Like a pull-behind trailer.
Well,
yeah.
I'm gonna need that with you next year when you visit. I need you to bring that with you and plan a whole road trip. And I have to rent a U-Haul.
Yeah. What are you talking about renting a U-Haul? I'm just going to hire people to move me.
No. I meant for my shit in Oklahoma.
Oh. I don't think they're that
like
close
to or nothing on it.
That's what tarps are for, and ropes.
Yeah, I guess
ropes.
So.
We do shit Okie style here. I wasn't looking for a top.
How exactly is he going to get it down with his little car?
I don't know.
I doubt his mom's going to let him drive his truck.
Trailer
truck.
And Jeremy's truck.
I wouldn't trust Jeremy's truck. I barely trust it to get him to work and back.
Well, I have some exciting news.
Okay.
So as of tomorrow at approximately 1 o'clock,
PM.
Yes. Officially a junior. And as of Tuesday at around 9:30 in the morning,
okay,
Liam is officially a middle school student.
Cool.
And Sophia is in fifth grade. I need some of you to make babies or something. Fifth grade, really? Also, though, proud of all my kids. Now, the high school essentially forgot about virtual this year. Even Austin said it. They basically put the big finger up at us with high school students that were virtual, and they got fucked out of every extra thing that happened.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, Katie didn't get any awards this year, although she really should have. She should have probably gotten the math award.
Yeah.
Liam got a couple of awards. He improved immensely this year. For a kid with the amount of ADHD that runs through his bones,
yeah,
he really worked hard to get better and do his work and get it in and do what he needed to do. And so I'm very proud of him. And his awards were really just, you know, being a virtual student, making it through the program, and being somebody that his teacher likes. I do have to brag a little bit, though. I have to, because she deserves it.
Yeah.
Our youngest, my itty-bitty, my fiercely independent, strong-willed child, got the citizenship award this year for straight A's.
Cool.
She took the social studies award. She took the ELA, which when we were kids, that was like language arts.
Yeah.
She took that award. And then she also got second honors.
Awesome.
So proud of her. She knocked virtual learning out of the water this year.
That's good. I mean,
it'll be interesting to see her try to reintegrate into, like, here's what she learned with COVID, okay? She hates people. She has zero desire to people again. She's like, I got two friends and now three. I don't actually need to go back to school because there's a lot of people I don't care about.
Oh, God.
She was like, I don't need any other friends. I'm good. Can I just stay home next year? No.
I think a lot of us learned how much we really dislike people during this whole year and a half of, or basically about a year now, of being completely locked down and you know, essential workers, non-essential workers, and stuff like that.
Definitely found out who cared enough to still be there.
Yeah.
But I finally got the comment, even though it was under somebody's breath as they walked by in a store the other day, about taking my mask off. Here it is, guys. I'm going to wear that mask till I'm in a grave. Know why? Because I have a very natural occurring resting bitch face. And when I don't like you, it shows. But my face is an open book. Okay, and half of that resting bitch face is covered up by my mask. So when you say stupid, ignorant shit, I can still look at you and you don't know if I'm smiling or not. I'm going to wear it till the end of time just so I don't have to censor myself anymore.
Look, I'll call you out. I don't care. If you say some stupid, ignorant shit to me, I mean, I've really relaxed my mask wearing a lot.
Oh, I have it because I don't like people.
Right.
I don't want to know what sealed it in for me. I felt really uncomfortable, felt a little out of place. Not so much in Kroger because generally everybody still wears a mask there.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. That's whatever. But I walked into Weigel's, which is a local gas station convenience store, was probably the only person in there, including workers, that had a mask on. And I did. I felt a little out of place. It's like being in middle school and having a giant pimple on your face.
Yeah.
You know, I was uncomfortable. Until I got to the register, and the person handed me my money and then looked up with that moment of surprise where you couldn't stop it, but it's going to happen anyway, and didn't cover it. We all know how I feel about sneezing, coughing, spitting in people's faces, right? Sneezed all over the plexiglass right in front of me, and I know the half of my face that was showing looked like I was going to have a heart attack. But all I could think in my head was, I'm good.
Yeah.
This is why. I'm going to keep wearing it. You, motherfucker, you would have sneezed all up in this. Threw a spittle on the plexiglass. No, I'm good. I'm going to keep wearing that mask. I'm good.
Okay.
It might not have protected me from much. But at least I could have, like, taken it off like a napkin and I wouldn't have had his spit up my nose or in my mouth.
Yeah.
Cover your sneezes. Just cover them. At least it wasn't on my money. At least I got the money first.
Yeah.
Seriously, the grossest moment I've had in, like, six months.
So... there's some exciting news in the world of Star Wars that I know Alex and I have been kind of talking about a little bit this week. I think we mentioned it in one of our conversations, and we'll probably talk more about it on Wednesday's show. But Dave Filoni got promoted to executive creative producer at Lucasfilm.
Oh, yeah. You said something about that, and I had the wrong reaction to it because I didn't know who you were talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
So, for those of you who don't know, Dave Filoni is the creative mastermind behind The Clone Wars, Rebels, Mandalorian, Star Wars Resistance, the Ahsoka series that's coming up, Rangers of the New Republic, Book of Boba Fett.
Basically, that got canceled.
What?
Rangers of the New... It got canceled.
See, I had seen some things about that, but on his page it still says there's like two episodes. So
I think Disney is going to either drop it or not continue with it.
I think that's probably due to Gina Carano, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of people were just wanting them to redo it with another Star Wars character. But I don't know. It's not something we really need, to be honest. But
it's
continue.
Not. Okay. And basically every TV series that has been about Star Wars, Dave Filoni has had a hand in. And he, other than George Lucas, he has contributed more to the canon of the Star Wars universe than anybody else. Like, when if you were talking to somebody that was just absolutely enthralled with Star Wars, you asked them who are the most influential people in the Star Wars universe, the first one's going to be George Lucas. Second one's going to be Dave Filoni. He created Ahsoka Tano. He built up the relationship between Ahsoka and Anakin. He gave us our love for Ahsoka. And he brought us some of the most memorable and influential moments in the Star Wars universe. Like, don't get me wrong, I love Jon Favreau. He did really good with The Mandalorian. But nobody else is as influential in the Star Wars universe as Dave Filoni, except for George Lucas. Am I wrong, Alex?
No, I think there's some people that are on par with Dave Filoni. I don't think it's just him. I think there's other directors and writers and musicians who are up there with him. But, yeah, I'd say Dave is in the top 1% of being influential on Star Wars.
Yeah.
Sounds like you made a girl.
Huh?
Sounds like you just made a girl.
No. He completely...
It's more than that. I don't know, it's kind of like that bond between Anakin and Obi-Wan. He kind of did that with Ahsoka, but more of a adolescent stage. And just see, he kind of helped her progress throughout her life. And it's not only with her, he did it with other Star Wars characters, such as like Ezra Bridger, Kanan Jarrus, some not so popular characters with Barriss Offee and characters like that. He just explored more of the universe that other people were either scared to or they just completely ignored.
Yeah. He made us feel sorry for Darth Maul.
Yeah.
And he made us love Darth Maul as both a antagonist within the universe and as a creature within the universe itself, and gave more essence to who Darth Maul was in both Clone Wars and Rebels. So,
yeah.
But again, that's for, you know, that's more for cinephiles.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we are going to go ahead and take a little break unless somebody else has got anything else.
No, I'm good.
Okay. So we're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we are going to dive into this mind fuck of a movie that we watched, Tenet. So get your notes ready, because this is going to be an interesting one. All right. We'll be back.
Behind the screen, we'll be right back.
Two minute people with their hearts set on it.
Welcome back to Behind the Screen Radio Show.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. I do apologize. We did have some connectivity issues during the break.
Welcome to 2021.
We've
had connectivity issues for about a week now through all avenues of internet, not just ours.
Yeah. No, I clicked the one that said live now. Okay.
So we should be up live on our Facebook.
There we are.
Just bear with us. We're working through it. There's not a whole lot we can do. Unfortunately, internet has been tentative at best. Even as my children put it, even when I go full Karen on the internet company.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what's going on. I know they've been working on
something.
You know, lines outside of our studio.
They have been, but our internet company has been at two different spots in our neighborhood for about the last week, working on something, trying to figure it out. I don't know what it is. I don't know. It's a conspiracy.
It is. Oh, thanks, Uncle Joe.
Big brother. Big brother's trying to cut us off.
Okay. So, yeah, we're back. And we are back live on Facebook, so you know you can go back and hit the new live button. You can also call us 718-664-9735. Again, 718-664-9735, and it'll bring you into us. So this week, I gave our co-hosts an option of movies to watch. You know, all of our co-hosts and personalities and stuff like that on Behind the Screen. One of them voted and didn't even watch the movie because, you know, they passed out before we even started the movie.
I woke up to gun noises for like 2 seconds and I went back to sleep.
Yeah, but that's okay. And we picked the movie Tenet.
We did.
Which I've been wanting to see this movie for a while, ever since it came out last year. And because it looked really, really interesting.
Well, I'm assuming that is because it is a new movie and it was one of the more interesting looking movies. So a lot of people have seen it.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, you know, it was written and directed by Christopher Nolan, who, you know, is just... I mean,
he's good at what he does.
He is. He did Interstellar. He did Inception. He did The Dark Knight, Batman Begins, Memento. So, I mean, he's done quite a few things. He's very talented in what he does.
Yes. So I'm going to let you guys kind of talk it out for a little bit, and then I'll pull my card.
Okay, good. So, Austin, I'm going to go ahead and let you break down the premise of the movie.
Okay. So, Tenet is about a man. He's going to be military in some capacity.
He was CIA.
Was it CIA?
Ex-CIA. Yeah, he's ex-CIA.
And he bit a pill.
It was supposed to be a cyanide pill, yeah.
Yeah.
And didn't die because it was a test, apparently. And then those people were like, man, you can kill yourself, so we're going to put you in this other thing.
He's a pulse.
And this other thing just happened to be all he knew it as is Tenet, but it was, that's not like the, that's just the code word.
So actually that is the name of the group.
But the name of the group is Posterity.
Posterity.
Yeah.
Kinda. The overall name of the entire project.
Tenet is the name of the organization that he created, that he is working for.
Spoilers.
But throughout the movie, they are finding objects that have reversed entropy, and it's because it's from the future. So instead of things going back in time, there's just objects in reverse friction and shit.
Inverted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're inverted in time. They're not going forward in time like us. They're going backwards in time.
And that's the whole premise of the movie.
And he's got to stop this Russian guy who's trying to say, so in the far distant future, a scientist figures out the formula for inverting entropy, which there's a whole scientific thing behind all this that, okay. So
it hurts.
It does. There's a lot of brain involved in this movie. I'm going to put this out there. I'm going to start this right here. Okay. I have a basic understanding of physics. Like if you explain physics to me in quasi-normal words.
If you break it down kindergarten style, he got it, bitches.
No, not even kindergarten style. Like, I understand, like, basic, you know, bachelor degree level physics. You know, I can understand what you are saying and understand the concepts that you have. The formulas? Way the fuck over my head. I'm lucky I can do 2 plus 2 equals 5. Okay? But the formulas are way the fuck over my head. But basic concepts of physics, I can understand. I literally tried to watch a couple of YouTube videos that tried to explain the movie and the science behind the movie today at lunch. And it literally made me question my own sanity. It made me question my own intelligence. Like, I'm fairly smart.
So, for the most part, so we don't have to go into explaining the science of it. For the most part, people just were upset with it because the science that they talked about didn't have to do with what they were doing. Because they didn't ever touch on the multiverse theory.
Right.
Even though they were basically touching two universes at the same time, but affecting one.
Right.
They never touched on that, which would have made more sense to me.
It probably would have explained the movie a little better,
yeah.
And probably would have made people understand it better versus, oh, you know, you're just, you know, going back in time through this, you know, you're going forward in time, but back in time, while other people are going forward in time, but look like they're going back in time. And it would have explained, it would have been less brain hurty-ish if they would have just been.
It wasn't really brain hurty-ish. It's just the science that they used to justify it didn't make sense with exactly what they were doing.
Yeah.
They touched on basic time travel theories for time traveling. Like, getting a box in it is all
yeah.
kind of different time type theories.
Like, but Back to the Future time traveling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then they didn't really do that. They just made up their own science.
Right.
And so they should have just made up their own science for the movie.
Right.
It was very odd to try and justify it with, I mean, all of them are theories anyway.
Yeah.
It was weird to try and justify something with a theory to make it sound smarter for people that don't know it, but also try to justify it in a way for people that wanted to watch it for any sort of scientific substance.
Right.
But used, like, the most basic stuff.
Yeah.
Most basic stuff that also didn't really even have to do with it.
Yeah, it's like using the laws of motion to describe, I don't even know what.
Because they talked about, like, the grandfather paradox, but then seemingly affected it immediately. they changed multiple things in the past. And if you changed stuff in the past, then you would never think of changing that thing in the past and then never go in the future to do it. But they seemingly did it multiple times in the movie.
Right, but they did it without...
With intention.
They did it with intention, but they did it without knowing that they were going to do it. Case in point, the car chase scene where they're... what's his name? Protagonist and Neil were going, you know, were driving with the piece to the equation. And what's his name? The bad guy. Why isn't he on here? What is his name? Because now this is going to make me mad. Because he was the main character of this. Why am I not seeing this guy's name? This is ridiculous.
Andreas Sater.
Yeah, that's right.
He is not on the gas system.
He is not, which is really weird. While he's driving backwards, but going forward.
Yeah.
But then you have the car crash, which is the protagonist, him driving. Anyway.
I would love to see the parts in this movie that were inversed. Because some of them we didn't actually get to see play through.
Right.
Like we got to see the airport scene played from the other side. But we didn't get to see like how the SUV that was driving backwards the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if you played that backwards, basically everything else is turning backwards slowly, and they just drove up and drove in front of them and was just driving in front of them the entire time.
Yeah.
But also driving backwards.
Yeah.
I think it would have been nice to show that.
Yeah.
It's very fun, that one, though. Because it was very fun to just watch this backwards thing drive faster than them.
Yeah. It was... So... I really don't even know, like, where... This movie...
It was also... The other thing I was trying to think of was... They... One of the things that they made up that was their own science was they were talking about all these things of how do we affect the past or the future at the same time of affecting our own past or the future. And he was like, just make sure you see yourself going into the machine. Just make sure you see yourself coming out of the machine.
Yeah.
And you know that you'll be going into the machine.
Right.
But I don't even understand how, if they went into the machine, they would have been coming out of the machine at the same time. So I don't know why they came out early. Like, he could see himself coming out. But also, that doesn't make any sense. There's a lot of stuff in here that seemed like everything is set up how it should be.
Yeah.
And you can affect certain things. But then there was, like, three or four examples where it was just pure manifest fate. Where you just manifest it and it happens. It's like, where is the cutoff for that?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I see myself on the other side with the paradox keys. Boom, we won.
Yeah.
I don't understand really how some of that stuff worked. That stuff was confusing. Like, it just didn't seem like it was thought out.
Right. Well, a good example of that is... the way I look at it, and this is a very basic example of it, but when we look at like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, the very first one, when they were trying to get the historical figures out of jail, and they said, hey, you know, why don't we just after we because they created a paradox in there. They were like, you know, well, after we bomb our report, why don't we just go, you know, back in time to when your dad had his keys, take them, hide them in the bush, and then, you know, that way we can have the keys here so we can get the historical figures out and finish our report. Well, so they said that, and the keys were like magically there, you know. I mean, yeah, they would have to do it after the report, but the paradox there, and you know, it's almost the same as like what you were saying with the paradox in this, is that they would have had to at some point in that timeline actually bombed their report.
Yeah.
But they couldn't have bombed their report because the keys would have been there. So, you know, it's the effect before the cause.
That's why a lot of people usually say, well, that's why we've kept it a theory, because that doesn't actually make sense. There's no way to fix that paradox. Like, there just needs to be another thought process happening.
Yeah.
But then it's also why should it be something that should be used to justify, like, a movie like this?
Yeah.
If you, like, they made up their own material. They made up what the future would be like, but for some reason kept the science to what we know.
Right.
Because the one guy was from the future, and he was like, yeah, the grandfather paradox. The one I know.
You're talking about Neil?
Yeah.
So Neil wasn't from the future. So there's a...
Yeah, he is the one from the future. He's the one from the future working with his boss from the past. But his boss from the past will eventually hire him to do that mission. So that Neil is from the future. That's why he said it was the end of his friendship. But protagonist, beginning of his. So that Neil is from the future. He's from the future for a while.
Yeah, no. Neil is from the, so in the end when you saw that thing in his backpack, he was the guy on the other side of the gate that got shot in the head. That's where Neil died. That's where he ends off. But whenever the protagonist, the main character, goes in the future and gets into this thing more, he recruits Neil in the future, and then Neil goes into the past and helps out his boss. His past,
yeah.
The boss in the past, to do this mission.
Yeah, he's basically it's the Terminator coming back in time to help John Connor, to eventually build him to go in the past to help him.
Right.
That's the whole thing. Neil is from the future.
Okay. So, one thing that bothers me, and I'm hoping that your thing here will explain some of this, but the one thing that bothers me is, so the whole idea behind the inversion is that it's not like a quick trip. Like, it takes you just as long to go back as it does to go forward. So
that is literally because it's not time travel. It's time manipulation.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying, though, is why do they explain the time travel theories? They're just doing a whole new concept.
Right. So the whole, like what you were saying, the whole grandfather paradox, that's kind of a dumb thing to look at, because, you know, they were saying, well, one of the things that they said within the movie is that the protagonist said, well, why don't we just go back before he had this and kill him? The thing is it would take them 20 years to go back. And that's 20 years of moving backward in time.
Yeah, and technically speaking, it would only take him 10 days to go back in time. And technically speaking, he would still be able to set off the thing then, and then all of time would be over.
Yeah.
According to what they said, it didn't go off, so we don't know.
Right.
They also didn't want to know, so.
Yeah.
They didn't want to.
Yeah, they stopped it.
Yeah, they didn't want to test the theory of if you go before it, does flight still exist?
Yeah. the thing is the whole movie in and of itself is a paradox, because they had to know that they completed the mission because they're still working to complete the mission. That, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they know that they completed the mission, so they're going to do the mission. So there's no worry for them to not complete the mission, because everything's going to happen the way it happens regardless, because it's still happening.
The only person that knows that completed the mission is young protagonist, and he probably didn't tell me.
You mean older protagonist?
Young protagonist would know. Grow up to be... I'm just saying younger protagonist would know, because he would grow up not telling anybody else. And then Neil would go out on this mission and then probably put the pieces together. Or he knew, but that sucks more.
Yeah.
I don't know where I draw the line of suck, because that just sucks. At some point, you know you're dying. At what point was it?
Yeah.
And then he's going to get another Neil, technically, because they will have never shared that friendship yet. So that means that they also won't technically share the friendship with older and younger compared. Now they're going to be the same age, starting a new friendship, and then ending that friendship when he dies.
Yeah. It's again, it's that whole time.
Yeah, in this movie, I think it's more and more realized that there is no free will. It's just what this movie goes off the fate.
Yeah.
Process.
Yeah.
Of just everything was fated to happen. You just gotta let the pieces fall when they do.
Yeah. I swear to God, Christopher Nolan has got to be like a Doctor Who fan, because the relationship between Neil and the protagonist, with Neil ending his journey and the protagonist, you know, ending his friendship at that moment, and the protagonist starting his friendship at that moment, is exactly the same as River Song starting her relationship with the doctor, with the 12th doctor. And, you know, she's going back in time as the doctor is going forward in time, because we see the end of River Song with the 10th doctor. We see her a lot with the 11th doctor. We see her, because we're following the linear progression of the doctor, where her time is going back. And we see the first time that they meet in one of the Christmas episodes. And that's where, so he knows that so that episode was the end of his journey and the beginning of hers. And the previous episode with the 9th doctor was the end of her journey and the beginning of his.
Yeah.
That's similar to what that moment was with Neil and the protagonist. And I know that's such a geek way to explain it, but that's literally the only way that I can literally wrap my head around that moment, is to be able to...
I don't know what it is with you guys with movies. Because in any other format, you guys are like, oh yeah, science and the things and the such. But whenever it comes to movies, you guys are like, this movie was fucking confusing. I'm like, time goes forward and then they go backwards and then they win.
I mean, it's easy to think of it that way. It's for me, it's very hard because of the way that they explain the inversion, you know, because
just can't think about that part. They explain stuff in this movie that should have never been explained or even thought of. They shouldn't have explained the inversion as thoroughly as they did. They should have just said, hey, this works because it just does, and that's it. Move on. And it should have just been an action movie instead of a mind fuck time travel movie. I think that's where this movie slips up. It should. It honestly should be as simple as Austin is explaining it. Time goes forward, it goes back, shoot some guns, have fun. Not, well, you have to touch it and do all this stuff, and you have to go through this portal, and then when you do that, you have to breathe a certain kind of air, because this air is going backwards, and it'll suffocate you, and you basically die. No, just go forward, go in the machine, go back, kill some people, have fun, big explosion, save the world.
Although I won't lie, I loved the part when we start to see the pieces come together. Like you will see scenes where at the beginning of the movie certain things were explained during storytelling time, and then as the movie goes on, you come into those scenes and you're like, oh. So her name was Catherine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the part where Catherine kills her husband though, and then drops his ass overboard. I liked it. Like, he took such a freaking dive off that boat, and then to watch them drag him behind the other boat. that was pretty cool.
It's a lot of...
It was kind of like not really a paradox, but, like, she says, I wish I was that woman that was diving off the boat.
Yeah, because she didn't know that was her.
She literally was the woman that dove off the boat.
Yes.
I thought that was cool.
She was envious of herself, which is super crazy.
Yeah.
That stuff is cool. But whenever you try to put in a real-world science into a science fiction science, it never works. I don't think it has. Like, you can't say, well, we've been studying this for years and this, and that. Like, in the beginning where he gets off of the windmill in the ocean and goes and meets up with the science woman, that whole entire interaction shouldn't have been in the movie, or it should have just been more simplified. Because she said, well, you have to touch it or throw it before it can come back to you. Half of the movie, nobody touched anything or did anything, and it still came back to him.
Yeah, I mean, it's still... Well, you gotta think, I would assume that's just... Those people weren't privy to all of the actual workings of it. She was still learning about it. So for her, it was still, like, the basic fundamentals.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't think... I haven't seen very many. I haven't seen Inception. I haven't seen any of the other ones. I've watched parts of Interstellar. It just seems to me like Christopher Nolan likes to over-explain stuff, and it just makes it really confusing. And people think that's a good thing, but I don't think that's a good thing at all. Whenever you confuse your audience and make them mad, like, just make a simple movie about time inversion, and you'll be good.
So
he had a lot of great action, a lot of great acting, some good shots, some amazing. But the story and how they just overdo the explanation of some stuff is just too much. And sometimes they just overdo, like when she got shot, she had 3 hours in the forward moving world, and then they put her in the inverse world, and all of a sudden she had 5 days, but then they put her back into the normal world and she was healthy again. I don't see how that makes sense at all.
Yeah, they were talking about, like, medical science as well that didn't make sense yet, I guess.
So,
yeah, and why would a reverse bullet do more damage than a forward? I feel like it's going the same speed and everything.
Yeah, they're doing
it. It's still a projectile hitting you at that speed.
So,
like, that stuff just...
The way that they explained it was... And you had to be listening and you had to catch it, is that the reverse bullet has the... Or the inverse bullet has the inverse radiation on it. And that's what will kill her quicker, is the inverse radiation. But when they... took her through the machine, which I don't understand why they didn't just take her through the machine that was right there. That was literally right there. Why did they have to go back to the airport to do it? Why did they just take her through the machine that was right there?
Well, the bullet can have radiation on it and all that, but in order for that universe to work backwards and forwards, the bullet wouldn't stay in her. It would go back in the gun.
Yeah, and that's what happened. Because in real time, the bullet at that close of range and the caliber that it was, would have gone through her.
Exactly, because it hit the glass. That's what I'm saying. It's backwards. It would go back into the gun. There's nothing in her to radiate her.
As the bullet travels through her, the radiation is on the actual projectile and leaves traces of the radiation in her body.
Right, but how come whenever the guy fired? Well, how come whenever the guy fired the gun, there's obviously like little shrapnel and stuff that comes off when you fire a gun. It just gets on your hand and stuff. How come whenever it came back into the gun, how come the gun wasn't contaminated with radiation and stuff? Because that's a lot of energy to be moving. So wouldn't the gun then be contaminated, and
also,
then wouldn't he then be contaminated?
Yeah. Also, everything else was. That was a forward-moving timeline, which means that that gun and that bullet was a normal gun and bullet. It was just in reverse. It wasn't the. It was just that timeline was in reverse. So,
also,
so
something
everything
else
in that, in that universe was forward-moving at one point.
Right.
Which means that that wasn't an inverse bullet. That was just a bullet going in reverse. So why would it be radiation? Because nothing
else
left radiation in that room.
Why, when he crashed, so in there in the highway scene, when the protagonist goes through the portal and chases down a Russian guy, and he's driving the sedan, the tan sedan, and he crashes it, and the Russian guy's like, oh, blah, 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 and then lights the car on fire, why did he freeze?
Oh, that's, they explained that. Still stupid science, but it was because he lit a forward-moving fire in a in an inverse world, and so the inverse world was able to put its physics on it, and technically it went backwards and really harshly, and so froze it instead because of what does fire do whenever fire is heating up something? It's like condensation. It's like that middle point between the cold thing and the hot thing. It's instead making it go backwards really harshly, and so it just froze over instead of burning.
I don't get why it would do that. Because it's not what happens in the reverse world is in reverse. Everything is just going backwards. Right.
Yeah, it wasn't because the fire was inverted. It was one of the only things going forward in time, and the inverse timeline didn't like that.
The fire was in the normal world, and it hit the inverse world because the car was inverted. And which... that doesn't make any sense, because how could the car be inverted?
Well, no, the car wasn't inverted. The entire world was inverted, including the person that lit the fire and the protagonist. Mm-hmm. The only thing that wasn't inverted was the fire that he lit, because he took it from the other world, or something like that.
I think they were in the normal forward-moving world. And the car, the SUV, the tan sedan, and the people inside it were all inversed. He lit a fire that should have been inversed. It should not have gone forward. Because his lighter is inversed. He is inversed. When he lights the fire, it should have never even gone off. So,
that was not his inverted self, or... That was not his forward self. That was his inverted self lighting the fire. But I think he was lighting the fire with an uninverted lighter. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, because the inverted, even if you're inverted, you can still affect the forward-moving world.
Yeah.
It's just when it comes in contact with something that's inverted, it completely just inverts itself.
Yeah. Something has to happen there. And so the writer was like, well, let's make it freeze.
Right.
Because something has to happen there when those things act on each other. It basically just fucks up the atoms.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to step in.
Basically,
yeah, I was gonna say.
The movie makes no sense.
Right.
It's a little bit lengthy. That's why I wanted to be able to get to it before we get too close to the end, because I'm going to be able to pause after the little sections so that you guys can do what you do. Okay, so after a long time of chicken with the coronavirus, Christopher Nolan's Tenet finally did hit U.S. theaters in August. Probably didn't see it then. On December 15th, it hit on-demand services. Some people watched it then, but most objected to the on-demand prices. And now it's on HBO Max for mass viewing. But even if you've finally seen Tenet, you probably didn't understand it.
No. Sorry. This is an article.
I'm going to give you two reasons. Naturally, Tenet explainers exist on the internet, but we humbly find them to be either confusing or incomplete. And sure, the idea of doing homework to explain a movie might not sound exciting, but once you know what's going on, there's a lot to like in Tenet. And arming yourself with the proper tools to understand it can let you focus more on the deeply impressive and exciting filmmaking on display for the third, fourth, or even fifth rewatch. But here are seven key things to know. How does time work? How does time in Tenet work? Okay. So despite what you may have heard, Tenet isn't really about time travel. It's about time manipulation. Rather than jumping forward decades like Back to the Future, the characters are able to do something more like rewinding and fast-forwarding through time. So this core idea is known as inversion. And it's possible thanks to a new technology that can reverse the entropy of people and objects. But thankfully, you don't need to know what entropy is to get it. Inversion is explained around 15 minutes in when the scientist Barbara makes loose bullets jump off the table into her hands in order to demonstrate the concept to the protagonist. The bullets are moving backwards through time while the people stay stable. Inversion becomes more complicated as it trickles into complicated action sequences like the highway chase. Eventually, when we realize that the masked man, the protagonist, fought down corridors during the Freeport battle, was an inverted version of himself, it becomes clear that scenes from the first half of the movie involve characters who rewound from the second half.
Yeah.
How does inversion happen? So inversion takes place when a person or thing passes through a temporal turnstile. The turnstiles were created by Tenet's bad guy, Andre Sater, and are typically housed in a large space. They show up in a few different places throughout Tenet, but the first time is during the Freeport sequence in which the protagonist grapples with a mass trooper. Later in the movie, the turnstiles are color-coded on either side to let people and the audience know what side is which. Red signals forward movement through time, while blue is for those going backwards. Crossing through a temporal turnstile automatically inverts whatever passes through it. Once on the other side, time is reversed, but only for the object or person that passes through. For everyone else, time is still proceeding in a forward direction. And so an inverted bullet isn't fired by a gun, but instead is caught by it. Cars seem to drive backward. People who are in inverted time can't breathe air backwards, so they have to carry oxygen machines. If you're in a fire, the flames draw heat away from the body, which means you freeze instead. When someone is inverted, they can move backward for a seemingly infinite amount of time, to the point, for instance, where they can interact with an earlier version of themselves. However, inverted time still flows at the same pace, which means if you're trying to get to an event that took place a week ago, you'd have to wait a full week. This is why near the end of the movie, for example, Neil, Catherine, and the protagonist have to wait things out in an inverted shipping container for a while before returning to the Freeport.
Okay.
What is the algorithm? Inversion initially doesn't seem too dangerous, but it turns out that the unnamed creator of inversion technology allowed it to become weaponized into an object known as the algorithm, referred to as plutonium-241 for a large portion of the movie, which is capable of inverting the entirety of time itself instead of just individual objects. Regretting this, the inversion creator decided to kill herself, but not before she broke the algorithm into 9 physical pieces, MCU, and hid them throughout time. So if stacked together to rebuild the final formula, the algorithm would cause all events on Earth to start flowing backward. The inversion of the Earth itself is said to cause a catastrophic event that would destroy everything that ever lived, according to Neil. Sater is part of a group that wants to acquire the algorithm and reverse time in order to undo the effects of climate change and other devastating things that have happened in the present, which fucks up the future. Also, he's dying and decides to take a melodramatic, if I can't have it, no one can, approach. This sets up Tennant's core plot. The protagonist must recover the algorithm's final piece to stop the end of the world. In other words, it's essentially a fancy Bond movie with Sater playing the over-the-top villain role. What happens in the opera house? The protagonist and his crew sit in a van outside the opera house waiting for a Ukrainian SWAT team to appear in response to a terrorist attack inside. When they arrive, the protagonist's squad puts on Velcro badges to match the real SWAT team and sneak in alongside them. As the Ukrainian team pipes gas into the main room to knock the villains out, the terrorists put on gas masks and begin planting bombs in the aisles full of people. The Ukrainian team moves in and begins to take out the terrorists while the protagonist rushes off to the box seats to rescue an asset because the whole siege is just a cover to assassinate him. They exchange a code phrase, "We live in a twilight world and there are no friends at dusk," to validate one another. It turns out the asset listed in the credits as the well-dressed man has brought something to the opera that the protagonist needs to recover. And the item in question is at coat check. The protagonist and the suited man zip line down to the main floor to retrieve the item. As they progress, the protagonist encounters a member of the Ukrainian team who has placed a bomb. The man asks the protagonist to place another. When he refuses, the SWAT member prepares to shoot, only for the protagonist to be saved by another member of his own team who also references dusk as a code word. The protagonist then runs to coat check to get the package, which is a piece of the algorithm, although he doesn't know this at the time. The protagonist and his team regroup and change clothes. The protagonist then rushes out to defuse the bombs, which are tied to a central timer. As the protagonist collects the devices, he's cornered by another SWAT team member who tells him to plant a bomb. He then notices a hole in the wood paneling begin to fix itself as the SWAT team member is shot by a masked third party. As he turns to run away, the protagonist notices a red string on his mysterious savior's backpack, which we later learn is Neil working to help him.
Yeah.
After the protagonist and one of his team members gather the last of the bombs to detonate them safely, they head out to escape in a getaway van, only to be caught and captured by a set of mercenaries. The mercenaries torture the protagonist for information, but he resists and manages to swallow a cyanide pill. The movie fades to black as the protagonist blacks out, but only for him to wake up and learn via an info dump from beloved character actor Martin Donovan that the entire interrogation was a test. At the end of the movie, we learn a future version of the protagonist sent the mercenaries to capture him so that he ends up being recruited for the Tenet organization that he'll eventually create.
Yeah.
What exactly is Tenet? Tenet is the name of the organization that the protagonist himself created to keep the Earth's timeline flowing correctly. It's also an interlocking hand gesture that indicates the flowing of time backward and forward, and a palindrome that's spelled the same in either direction. Other instances of inversion symbolism include Sater's name, which is a reference to Sater Square, a 5x5 interlocking grid of letters dating back to the early Christian era, that reads the same in every direction. Sater's name backwards is ROTUS, which is the name of the security group that guards the Freeport warehouse. Tenet also contains the word 10 front and back, and that number comes into play as a measurement of time during the film's staggering closing set piece known as the temporal pincer. What's a temporal pincer? This is where Tenet really starts to get confusing. The pincer movement is a military maneuver that involves attacking an enemy from both sides simultaneously, closing like a lobster or crab claw. Tenet's pincer involves two different teams attacking a location from both directions in time, forwards and reverse, hence the temporal bit. The best way to keep everything straight is to pay attention to the way Nolan color codes things. Red signals forward movement through time, while blue is for those going backward. Also, those who have been inverted were oxygen masks, which is another signifier.
Yeah.
A few different temporal pincer movements happen throughout the film. Sater performs the pincer during Tenet's highway car chase sequence. The first time we see the sequence, Neil and the protagonist successfully capture the final piece of the algorithm. Then the duo see an Audi driving in reverse toward them on the highway. Inside the inverted vehicle is Sater. You know he's inverted because he's wearing an oxygen mask, holding Catherine at gunpoint. He counts down from three, preparing to shoot her as another car that was lying upside down on the road in front of them flips right side up and begins driving in reverse. As Catherine's life is threatened, the protagonist hands over the algorithm piece by bouncing the case off the second inverted car onto Sater's Audi. Sater escapes into another vehicle as the protagonist jumps into the Audi and rescues Catherine. From there, the protagonist is captured by Sater's crew and is brought to a warehouse containing a turnstile for interrogation. As the protagonist is brought into the red side, he notices Sater walking in reverse to the turnstile with Catherine. Sater stands on the other side of the glass in a blue room to note that he's inverted with Catherine and interrogates the protagonist, eventually shooting Catherine with an inverted bullet. The protagonist seems to acquiesce, giving him the location of the algorithm piece to the inverted Sater. At this point, a non-inverted Sater runs into the protagonist's room to question him again. As Commander Ives and his backup arrive to assist the protagonist, Sater heads through the turnstile into the past, setting up the events that just happened. The protagonist then heads through the turnstile after Sater, after telling Ives he lied to him about the location. Now we see the highway events unfold from the past perspective. The protagonist gets into a vehicle to give chase. It's at this point we realize the second reverse car was actually an inverted protagonist coming to help save the day. However, Sater figures out the lie and confronts the protagonist, flipping the car over and leaving him for dead. After the protagonist wakes up, Neil tells him Sater has the final algorithm piece, but we don't actually see Sater snag it. He just blows up the saw with the inverted protagonist. But Neil tells the audience he's successfully recovered it.
Right.
So what happens at the end? Sater's crew tries to assemble the algorithm in the villain's Soviet-era hometown of Stalys 12, setting up Tenet's massive concluding set piece. It's another temporal pincer with two different teams starting their approach to Stalys 12 from opposing ends of a 10-minute window in another play on the 10 portion of the movie's title. The red forward-moving team consists of the protagonist and Ives, while the blue team consists of Neil and a group of backward-moving inverted troops. As the duo arrive at the algorithm's location, an underground bunker, they appear to be too late because Sater's crew has pieced all nine parts together behind a locked gate. They plan to bury the algorithm and then explode the bunker, leaving it underground for recovery in the future. As Sater's crew works, Ives and the protagonist notice a dead soldier on the other side who suddenly reverts to life, stopping a bullet meant for the protagonist and locking the gate. Turns out the soldier was Neil. After Ives and the protagonist head underground, Neil chases Sater's henchmen through a turnstile. After a beat, he proceeds to cross through the turnstile, uninverting himself in the process, since he was originally on the blue team. Neil then drives a truck to pull Ives and the protagonist out right before the explosion seals them inside. The three regroup, having saved the day. It's at this point Neil states that he's been working for a future version of the protagonist this entire time. The two are pals, having met in Neil's past, which is actually the protagonist's future. That's why in one of their first scenes together, Neil already knows the protagonist doesn't drink when working. Neil then states that this is the end of his story, as he'll need to leave in order to put himself in the right place in time to take the bullet underground. However, the two will meet again once the protagonist recruits Neil at some point in the future. This is the close of their friendship, but the beginning is still to come. At this point, we can understand that Tenet's narrative functions as a temporal pincer itself, with the past and future versions of Washington's protagonist working to bring the film's events together, like the aforementioned opera house opening. It's hard to fully comprehend where the movie truly ends and where it begins. Does your head hurt? This is why, perhaps more than any other Nolan movie, it's worth revisiting Tenet a second or third or fourth time to see how it all comes together.
What you just explained was how I watched the movie the first time.
Good.
Yeah, literally just explained the entire movie.
Get it that way.
Yeah, like that was the entire breakdown of the movie.
Well, thank you, Angel. Listen, I found that today, though, and read it, and I was like, well, it didn't give me a better understanding of, like, he didn't make me go, oh, because I got the basic premise last night. There was a lot of jumping around in the story. I could see how it helped other people see what's happening.
Right. It's just, so the movie in and of itself is essentially two movies in one, is what it is. You've got the people going forward in the movie and then the people going backward in the movie. So
I feel like that would just be a half of a movie. Because you have your first half of your movie played out, and then you just hit rewind, and then there's the second half of your movie.
Yeah, because there is a certain part in the movie where they're not doing either of those things. They are from the future, but have inverted time, and then uninverted time, and are living out a different part of their present time, but in their past. Which just adds another layer.
Yeah.
I enjoy that layer, because there's no explaining there. It just happens. Like, you don't have to explain.
So, what... There has to be double of everybody now, then, right? Because they go through the portal at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
Before they go through the portal, they go through the portal at the dock where she gets shot, and they're in reverse time. And while they're in reverse time, their normal original timeline cells is still playing out the first half of the movie, but we're just seeing it through reverse with the guys now. Even whenever they fight, they're still double.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what happens to the second person?
They eventually get inverted and go back in time and then live out that second part. And then there's only going to be one person after that.
Yeah.
There's only going to be one set after that.
So I watched a video today during lunch. And one of them was on the different timelines of the main characters. And at any given point in time, I don't remember the girl's name.
Catherine.
Yeah. It explained at one point in time, Catherine was in the same time period, but there's four different versions of her.
Yeah.
One of them had gone back, was going back in time, was inverted. Another one was going forward, and then there was another one inverted and another one going forward. But they were all together in one timeline, and, you know, they were all doing different things because of the inversion. And it's the same with the protagonist, where at the same time that he's going through – for instance, the same time he's going through the vault at the airport, he's also coming back to the airport. So there's two people in that same timeline doing the same thing. And we even see that when they fight each other.
So, like, if you invert once and then go back a week, and then you don't do it ever again, there's only going to be two of you for a week. And then after that, there's only going to be one of you.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you keep going back in that week time frame, if you keep going back a week, there could be literally an infinite number of you in a week.
Yeah.
Because you've got – well, there's actually three of you in that week, because you've got the one going forward, you've got the one going back, and then you've got the one that is going forward at the same time.
No, because the one going backwards eventually – reverts and is going forward with the second one. There's only going to be two.
No.
It's always going to be three
because you've got you've got the original one going forward, right? Then you've got the other one going back, right? So.
But the only reason it doubles up is because of the one going backwards.
Right. But then that person goes forward again. So you've got the original that goes to the point to invert to come back. But then they invert again and go forward. So the two going forward are there.
Yeah.
And then the one coming back is there. So during that week, at one point during that week, all three are going to be in the same timeline.
Like that airport scene? you have the one that inverts and is running to the airport, and then you have the one that's running away from the airport. At one point they match up. That doesn't have to happen, but at one point they match up and they're biting each other.
Right.
And then he switches, and then he's going forward in time. If nothing else happens, there is now only two going forward. The one going backwards has already done its run its course.
Right, but you're thinking of the time in front. If you look at
there's no time in front until that happens.
Right. But there's going to be three.
There's not going to be three. There's only going to be two. Because in that first timeline, the second thing can only happen until the second one hits it. And then that second one is still running his course.
Right. But they all happen in the same time frame. So it takes you a week.
In the same time frame, but that doesn't mean each time you do it, there's a new one of you.
Yeah, because there's the original.
Yeah.
So there's one of me going forward in time right now, right?
Yeah.
I want to go back a week from today,
mm-hmm.
so that I can go forward a week from today. So I can do something last Sunday that I didn't do in this time frame. Okay. So today I decide to invert and go back to the last Sunday. While I'm inverting, there's me going forward.
There's not you going forward. There's only you going backwards now.
No, because you're still in that time. Because if
you're talking
about
you from a week ago going forward?
No. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going forward right now.
Last Sunday.
Between last Sunday and this Sunday, I'm going forward.
Mm-hmm.
But between this Sunday and last Sunday, I'm inverted.
Yeah.
And the only way that I can get to this Sunday from last Sunday is to go forward.
Yeah.
So I invert myself to go back. While I am going back, I'm still going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's two.
Yeah.
When I get to that Sunday, I still have to turn myself back.
Yeah, but that one's the same person. That one's the same person having that thought to go backwards and then hit the second time loop again. Because if you think about it, the one traveling backwards is going to be the same one that travels forward.
No.
Yes. Because
no, because then I would... So it's the grandfather paradox.
It's not.
It is.
It's very simple. This one's going forward, and then at this certain point, you've now inverted.
Right.
So now you're going to see yourself again.
Yeah.
And it's happening like this. And you meet up.
Right.
At that week. And then you invert. And now there's this person. And now you just have the two people, the one that's eventually going to invert and the one that is not going forward.
So where's the guy that...
Right here. He's going to be the one that eventually inverts. The first one.
Right. But there's still the inverted going back.
There isn't. This is going to be the one, the first guy... is going to be the one that eventually inverts to go back. This guy has already done it. So that means that if you perfectly sync it up for a week, there's going to be two of you going forward at one point, and then one of you going forward and one of you going backwards at another point, but never three of you.
It's still going to be because you still have to have the person going back while you're going forward.
That'll be the first person.
But that first person, but if you invert at that point, then you ultimately take away that inverted person, which means the person never inverts.
Yeah, he does. The first person does. First person inverts. The only reason there's two of them is because you hit your own timeline. So that means that second person hit that timeline and then reverted. Two of you going forward. This person's going to invert, go backwards. Now there's one of him going backwards.
You need to watch the video on the timelines because it explains it. Because at one point there was four of Catherine in the same timeline because they inverted so many times.
Twice. That wasn't because she was traveling. That's not because of what you're saying. That's because she inverted twice. And so there was an inverted, uninverted, inverted, and uninverted all at the same time. not an inverted, an uninverted, and a traveling inverted.
Okay. It's just all...
See, look, now we got to watch it a second, third, or fourth time.
I'm not going to. I very much understand it. It's very... It's just because it's shoddy writing. They had a concept, and they knew what they wanted to do early to make it seem cool later. But besides that, there was not really any other time, thought put into the what time does.
Overall, despite the weird, convoluted science within the movie, overall, the movie was done very well.
Yeah.
The special effects for the movie were pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
The way that they brought everything together, where you have inverted going backwards and normal going forward, and the way that they put them in the same universe and in the same timeline.
I honestly don't know how you do that from a director or even like a filming perspective of like filming one thing and then filming that same thing with cameras that don't exist in that first shot, but filming it the exact same way from a different point of view.
It's a lot of green screen, a lot of computer. So
that's insane.
What you would do is you would film it going forward. You film the scene going forward.
Yeah.
And then you'd put the person in there, the actor in there, walking forward. But on the green screen, you have – so when you set it up on the computer, you have the video going backward.
That makes sense to me. It's the airport fight scene between the two protagonists that really gets me.
Yeah, that was a lot of good choreography.
Mm-hmm.
Is how do you choreograph one person fighting forward and another person fighting backwards?
And then it was also the point whenever the protagonist is on the ground and the other protagonist is on him.
Yeah.
Where they film it from one point of view. They film it from, like, the protagonist's point of view upward.
Yeah.
But then also downward. And it's the exact same scene.
Yeah. Yeah, it was quite interesting the way, and I have to give it to Christopher Nolan. He does some amazing things with special effects, amazing things with cameras. He did it in Interstellar. I haven't seen Inception, which is odd.
Did he make Inception?
He did.
Okay, that makes way more sense now. this is like if you had a second try at Inception. This is exactly what this is, because Inception was a really bad movie.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's terrible.
It's weird because I both wanted to see it and not wanted to see it at the same time.
It has the exact same thing of a concept supported by shoddy science, and then they just roll it. And then it's also an action movie. And they do the exact same thing in that movie where they over-explain.
Yeah.
It's just 5 minutes of being like, this is what we're doing. Hopefully you got it. Now we're just going to do it and not explain it anymore.
Right. And, I mean, Christopher Nolan, he's done some really, really good work. I mean, he did Batman Begins. He did The Dark Knight. He did Dark Knight Rises. He wrote part of the story for Man of Steel.
I think he's a really good writer. Like, the things he does, he works with a lot of foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Like, things in, like, Inception and this, where you're talking about dreams and time travel, there's physical foreshadowing.
Yeah.
There's like crazy amounts of foreshadowing in Batman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He likes to do the whole foreshadowing thing. And he's really good at what he does. It's just sometimes it's not always the way he should have done it. Like if we take, Interstellar, for instance, the entire movie is such a fantastic concept until you get to the end and you get to the idea of the time travel at the end in Interstellar. And it is just off the wall, out of this world, just crazy. And it makes for the ending of Interstellar almost ruins the entire movie, because it is that so far out there that it is just weird. And I think that's kind of how Tenet is that a lot of the explanation within the movie and trying to explain the science behind it and kind of get intellectual with it kind of takes away from the premise and the action and the storyline of the movie, because now, you know, we're trying to understand it in our brain when we watch the movie. How is this happening? And then he comes in with this pseudoscience. I say pseudoscience because time is not a real science. Not saying that it's not a real science. Don't quote me on that. It's a science that's a hypothetical thing. Trying to figure out exactly what time is. It's not hours, minutes, and seconds that are on your watch or on your clock. That those are constructs made up by man.
Yeah.
Time in itself is beginning and end, and the travel through. Still trying to figure out how that works, why it works, and stuff like that. And we were talking about this last night, Miss Angel.
Mm-hmm.
You and I were trying to, as best as we could conceive of it, talking about how time works and kind of talking about Interstellar with black holes and how as you get closer to the event horizon of the black hole, how time slows down for the person, but it's all just gravity.
I'm not going to talk about that because as far as we know, that's just a theory.
Right.
Nobody's been next to a black hole.
Right, right. And when the only way that we are able to perceive of that is because of how fast light travels through a black hole.
Yeah.
We've kind of been able to measure the speed of light and how light is, you know, how light is emitted from farther stars and even our star, and, you know, kind of how it goes into a black hole. And I'm not going to get into the science of it because I don't even...
We do light fast, black hole make it slower, but still super fast.
Yeah. Yeah, it's look, if you're really that interested... Look it up. And if you have any knowledge of it, please, you know, contact us because I would be interested in understanding it. Anyway, so it is about that time.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the final act.
All right. Since Alex hasn't talked a whole lot here in the past, you know, 10, 15 minutes or so, we're going to let him do his final act first. Alex, what did you like about the movie? What did you not like about the movie? Would you watch it again? Would you recommend it?
What I liked about the movie, the camera work, the special effects, the fight choreography, the acting, I thought that was pretty good. The casting, people who were casted in this movie did a fantastic job. What I did not like about the movie, it's way too complicated for just to watch and understand. It should have been more simplified, and you kind of just have to think about it in a simplified way in order to just understand it. You go forward, you go back, things explode. That's all this movie should have been. But instead, I feel like Christopher Nolan thought, why don't I just make a movie that I only understand and people will never get because I'll never tell them. You know, it was kind of like that for me. Like, as he was making the movie, he didn't tell people, hey, this is the concept. This is what is in, like, my universe, per se, and this is what is happening. He just kind of did what he wanted and then tried to use a real-world way to explain it instead of using a fictional way to explain it. And I think it bombed massively in that aspect because it just doesn't work at all. He should have just been like, yeah, there's like a crazy time warp thing. We have these machines that help us travel through it. And then boom, you fight yourself button backwards. And it's just awesome. It should have been John Wick just in reverse, you know. That's how this movie should have been, but instead he tried to overcomplicate it. And that's what really bums me out about this movie. You know, if I do watch it again, I'll just watch it to see people fight each other in reverse, because I think that is really cool. I think the concept is cool, but the way he executed it was way just not good. I'm not saying the movie's bad. I'm just saying the way he executed the story was bad. But other than that, I'd give it like story 2 out of 10. Or not story. Execution of the concept 2 out of 10. Everything else 8 out of 10. Would I recommend it? Probably not. It's just a massive headache.
Alex, can you hear us?
Yes.
Oh, there we go. Okay. There we go. All right. Of course.
There's that
good. My stuff shut down.
Yeah.
All right.
So, you know, 15 minutes before we... 20 minutes before we end the show, our internet's going to cut us out.
Listen. I'm happy that it made it through 90% of the show.
Even though our live feed on Facebook kept cutting out.
I mean, it happens. It happens. but we did get all of Alex's.
We did.
Literally cut out right at his last word.
Yeah. All right. Austin, your final act. Real quick.
The Senate is...
You want me to go first?
Yeah.
So, here's my thing. And Austin talked about it the other night. I thought it was really cool that they used a lot of practical effects in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, when they did the inverted car scene.
Yeah.
On the highway, it was all practical. They have the scene. And then you have the airplane, the terminal or the building. It was all practical. No CGI, no anything. And I thought that was really cool. I loved that. I actually really loved the actors of the pick. I thought it was a great role for Pattinson.
Yes.
I enjoyed a good portion of the movie. There were just parts, mostly when they were talking about it. Like, I could kind of follow along and keep things in my mind and backtrack and do all that stuff when action was happening. It was when they tried to break it down.
Yeah.
That my brain 100% was like, what? What do you mean? So that was the only part I didn't like about it. I really felt like, and I think the guys kind of said that, I felt like they tried to explain it too much. Like, just don't talk, because now you've confused me. God, it was happening. And then when you tried to break it down, I was like, I don't understand. By the end of the movie, I was just, my brain is fried. But would I recommend it? I kind of would. Like, it is definitely an interesting concept. We talked about that last night. It's an interesting concept. Would I watch it again? I mean, maybe, to see if I felt less dumb at the end of it. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Not anytime soon. I need to recover first. So, yeah, that's me. That's all I've got for you. I did enjoy a lot of... I was telling Alex and Austin, one of my favorite parts, though, honestly, was when she killed her husband.
Yeah.
And knocked his ass off the boat, and then they were dragging him behind the speedboat. I actually really liked that part.
Well, they were trying to get it away because that was the future husband
that was on there. It was. But I thought it was...
Fun. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my... That's mine.
Okay.
But if if I lose connection or my computer restarts, it has like a 1 in 5 chance of making my default search engine Yahoo. So I have to switch it every time.
You should be able to go into your settings and...
He does.
Switch it? I do.
Yeah.
I know. And
I
make it a permanent thing.
I did. But I delete it from... I even delete Yahoo from my entire
thing.
So
annoying.
But it just puts it back.
I know.
I don't even know why Yahoo. Stupid.
Anyway.
Some weird add-on.
Your final act.
I know why it does it, by the way. It's because of McAfee.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah.
McAfee's secure search is Yahoo.
Yeah.
I liked it. I thought the cinematography was really good. I thought that they put a lot of effort into it. I just think they should have talked less. But talk louder as well. Like it said, this movie did remind me of like a Blade Runner-esque, like so many questions for no reason. Like everybody answered in a question with a question really quietly.
Yeah, yeah.
And
they talked really
the
fast,
scenes,
too.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we're going to go here, and then we're going to go to England, and then we're going to go here. Okay, go. Okay, now we're here. Okay, now shoot. Okay, now go. Okay, fire. Okay. It's like,
yeah, they really tried to fit into, like, 2 hours or whatever it was. I don't remember what it was.
2.5 hours.
Just do what you say you're going to do.
But, or just have, like, context. Like, we know that you're going to do something. It's a movie. But, like, even the action sequences... They did this weird thing where, like, they didn't want music, they just wanted sound effects.
Yeah.
And, like there was a score, but it wasn't music. And it kind of, it interested me, but not enough to the point to where it didn't not frustrate me. Because it made the fight scenes very, very quiet.